Well, thank you. I guess, first of all, I feel a little bit like a duck out of water because I'm a range beef cattle nutritionist and not a geneticist or animal breeding. So this is going to be a change of course for many of you. But I'm happy to be here, despite the fact I'm the last person on the program and keeping you guys from dinner or what else you had planned for this evening. Today I was asked to talk about just new technologies that we're using in beef research, and I've changed the title a bit from what you have in your program and just said new technologies but applied to old beef cattle production questions. The new technologies in general that I'm going to talk about is really just ways to measure feed intake with beef cattle. And I'm a little bit embarrassed standing here because I think the advancements in animal breeding, genetics, things like that, far outweigh where we're at in beef cattle nutrition. There's a couple of people that probably agree with that assessment. I'm not going to talk about GrowSafe, but I really think GrowSafe was really one of the first companies that really jumped into this. They're really the standard and technology for evaluating individual animal intake behavior, and it's standard equipment. Many universities, USDA locations, Montana State University, we currently, in our beef research program, we have 18 GrowSafe units, 8 GrowSafe for sheep. And then our Northern Ag Research Center at Haver, we have 32 GrowSafe units in the feedlot. So I use these a lot, despite the fact that I'm not going to talk about them much in this presentation. And there's all kinds of industry examples. Most of you have seen these, but the ones that come to mind for me is Midland Bull Test, where they run 1,200 head of bulls through the bull test. They're on feed essentially October to March. They have 24 pens, 50 bulls per pen, with roughly 192 GrowSafe units for that. It's pretty remarkable feed intake effort, looking at feed efficiency and things like that. Just last week, Western Section Animal Science meetings were in Boise, Idaho. We got to tour Simplot's Grandview feedlot, and they have a bank of GrowSafe there where they actually test essentially their Charolais bulls and their purebred program and compare that, the intake data they get from that, to the offspring of the Charolais bulls. Probably a data set most of us would like to get our hands on, but they're pretty quiet about that. But anyway, GrowSafe's the standard. It's been around for a long time. I'm going to talk, though, about SeaLock. You guys have seen them out in the lobby. You've seen some of their equipment out in the parking lot. SeaLock is a relatively new entry to measuring feed intake and feed intake behavior. In fact, only in just the last 4 years, I think, so really, when they jumped into this. They're not a new company in terms of beef cattle research. And they've been doing methane research and things like that. Some of you heard it under the program of green feed for a number of years. And so they're certainly used to working with research and things like that. SeaLock, and particularly the smart feed systems, really have been great at developing equipment for unique challenges and opportunities. And I just want to talk a little bit about my Montana State University experience. For about 25 years, I worked for Oregon State, and about 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, I was offered a position at Montana State as endowed chair. And I ran into this company at the National Animal Science meetings, and we talked about kind of the kinds of equipment and things I wanted to do at Montana State. And essentially said, gee, I want to measure self-fed supplement intake at very, very remote locations on extensive rangelands. And when I'd had a conversation with GrowSafe, to be quite honest, they said, we don't have time for you. You're just one of those range beef cattle people. You're not that important, which is probably true. But I think the research is important to our cow-calf folks. But we started the conversation, essentially said, I'm in locations with no power, no internet, and very severe winter environment. And Montana, particularly last 2 winters, has been very severe winter environment. And what I found out is this was a company that was very much interested in precision nutrition and the application to commercial beef cattle production. So I was offered a job at Montana State in May. I met him at National Animal Science meetings in July. in August. I got permission from Montana State to start ordering equipment, even though I wasn't going to start work until November. And so we started working with Sealock. The truth is, and I think most, you're going to find most people in academia, we're just really frustrated ranch kids, okay? And I grew up in a Catholic family and youngest of eight children. And so it still comes out in the way I process things. And when I was talking to them, they said, well, how do you want to use this? And I said, well, you know, I want to put out these feeding units and provide supplement. And they said, how are you going to do that? And what I sort of thought in my own mind is that I would just bolt these to a flatbed trailer and dig a trench out in the middle of rain somewhere and drop the axle into that and set up solar panels. You know, and it was flawed. It was certainly flawed, had lots of problems. It was going to be one of those baling wire and duct tape things. And as I talked more and more with them, they said, let us take a crack at designing this and see if you like it. This is what they came up with. Way better than what I had in mind, and I really feel fortunate. We have two of these. This is called the Smart Feed Pro Trailer. Each one of these is essentially the equivalent of a GrowSafe unit. This is an EID reader right here. Reads the EID when the cow sticks its head in there. Everything's electronic. It's totally ran off solar panel. Reads the cow's name. It timestamps it, and then it measures intake of that supplement. And there's actually four units on this trailer, and we currently have three trailers, okay, that are like this. And it's worked real well. We've modified it over time. You know, I think about where we started, where we're at now. We've changed quite a bit of the hardware. We've improved upon things. One of the things we found, and we'll talk about that data, is that environment's very important. So we're putting weather stations into these. So when now the cow sticks its head in there, we know when it eats, how much it eats, and it timestamps the weather conditions with wind speed, temperature, things like that. But it's been a wonderful tool for us. And that's really what it is. It's a research tool. So what I'm going to do now is basically just show you how we use some of this technology in a handful of studies. And then at the end, hopefully, if you have questions, you can ask me about it. First thing, so why? So why does this even matter? Well, first thing I'd tell you is that we're really lacking information about beef cattle feed intake. And that may surprise a lot of you. But it doesn't a beef cattle nutritionist. We have a lot of really well-established data and backgrounding and feeder scenarios. But unfortunately, we're really lacking what I call really good, credible data for cow-calf production. And that may surprise you. We have some models out there we use. We have some assumptions that we make. Certainly in winter feeding scenarios where we feed hay, most ranchers have a handle on that. But when we get into cows grazing on pasture and rangelands, the data falls apart. And in fact, there's not that many publications out there where I would say we have pretty accurate measurements. So this technology is important, and for a variety of reasons. Also, the way we previously have conducted research, one, it was quite difficult, particularly to statistically analyze that data. And in many cases, contain numerous sources of errors. The truth is, the way we measured intake with grazing animals is we used markers. And we tried to feed those markers, we put them in sustained-release boluses, and then we followed those cows around and collected fecal samples, and then we measured the markers in the feces. Most of it's not very accurate. Not very good at all. And so anything that we can do that improves upon that method is going to be a help. I'll make fun of my own research because this is some of the things that I've done. But paper after paper of cow-calf production, you'll see this. This is a common technique to statistically analyze data where we get feed intake or supplement intake. This is where you have cattle in a common pasture, but you bring them in every day or three times a week. You sort them into treatment groups. You provide a supplement, and that's how we did this research. Fairly common design. You see it in a number of papers. The problem with this is the fact that we have to gather every day or three times a week certainly interferes with their normal behavior. The other problem with this, and I think this is a problem with animal science research, is everything's based on averages. Okay? We know what the average intake of this pen is, but we have no concept of what the variation of intake is among individual animals, which I think is a weakness of traditional research, and one that we're finally starting to get tools to get a handle on this. This was in my earliest days, and quite frankly, I think I would probably get trumped up on charges of grad student abuse to do these kind of studies. But this is where we were working at the USDA research station outside of Burns, Oregon. These cows were on 2,000 to 4,000 acre pastures. We gathered the cows daily. Actually, not we, the grad students gathered them daily. Fed them individual supplements here that are in these bags, and then turned them loose. And for a minimum, they had to be at least 84 days. In some cases, these were 112 to 120-day studies through the winter period. We got individual consumption. We know exactly what each cow did. And so that was a step in the right direction. This was sagebrush steppe rangelands with roughly about 400 pounds per acre forage. And by the time you gather those cows every day, you've really disrupted their normal patterns. But this is the way we used to do it. Okay, another reason why I think this information is really important is think about in your own settings all the arguments we have over cow efficiency. And I hesitate to even use that word efficiency because you get people mad. But the reality is, I spent 25 years at Oregon State, the last three at Montana State, and these Western beef production systems. Reproduction is number one culling criteria. And in fact, you know, some of our producers, it's up to about 80% of their culling is based solely on reproduction. And so efficiency is just, do they breed? And are they bred each fall? But, you know, beyond that, there's other factors we can look at. Obviously, production per cow. You know, in an example, this might be percent body weight weaned. It could be pounds of calf per cow, things like that. You know, and I hear ranchers say this all the time. Gee, shouldn't cows be able to wean 50% of their body weight? And is that a metric we can use? Well, I don't know. But ultimately, we need to know how much they eat, right? For every pound of calf that cow produces, we need to know how much that cow eats. And, God, what a wild ride in terms of cow size. This is, you know, I stole this from Harlan Ritchie, but this is back in the 1940s, and we all saw those pictures. But you go back prior to that, and Harlan's slide set does that. You know, we went from big to small, and we're somewhere in between, and we're arguing about where we need to go from here, which is sort of humorous. And even now in the industry, you know, gosh, we got all kinds of frame sizes. And certainly a considerable debate about what's the best. What's the ideal cow size? You know, there's been several reports in popular press, Beef Magazine in particular, University of Wyoming and North Dakota State University has had some outreach in regard to cow size. Several past publications that have looked at this. But, and a lot of these imply that smaller cows are more efficient. And certainly, I came from a background, worked a lot of producers in the Great Basin where that, in fact, appears to be true. But I think some of the rationale for this small cows being more efficient is flawed. And the reason why I say that is they're not measuring intake, because they don't know how to measure intake with grazing cows, and so they model intake. And in many cases, for instance, University of Wyoming data, they assume it to be a one-to-one ratio with cow weight, and it's not. That's not true. It doesn't even jibe with our NRC models. And I think it sort of artificially, you know, gives too much credence to the small cows over large cows. And why do I say this? I'm not going to bore you with a whole bunch of nutritional theory. It's getting late in the day. But, you know, there's some things that we know in terms of nutritional physiology of animals. One, smaller animals have higher metabolic rates than larger animals. And what that really means is due to a number of factors such as thermal regulation, relationship to body size, maintenance function required for all animals. But typically these maintenance functions are greater for the small animals. essentially energy needs is related to body size, but energy requirements are proportional to, but raised to the 0.75 power. You guys have gotten a lot of formulas in the last couple days. You certainly don't need one from a range nutritionist. What this means, if it was 1-to-1, it'd mean it was directly proportional. If it's less than 1, it means as body size goes up, maintenance energy proportionally is a bit smaller. Okay? And so some of this logic about cow size doesn't really fit. Yeah, and that's why whenever we express intake in nutrition studies or intake studies, in many cases we'll put that on what we refer to as a metabolic body size or body weight to the 0.75 power. And that's the most fair way to do it. And lastly, and I'll just throw this out here, and I don't want to make people mad about cow size, but Van Soest, in probably the book that most universities still use for advanced ruminant nutrition, has a whole chapter on ruminants and size. And essentially what he says is the larger the ruminal reticular capacity of an animal, the greater the ability of that animal to digest and utilize high-fiber, low-quality feeds. And so he even says within a breed or within a species, that's also true. And so some of these things conflict with each other. And I think we still have a lot of questions to answer to get to these. Finally, before I actually start showing you some data and how we've used this equipment, I want you to think about just a second some of the kinds of forage resources that we deal with really throughout North America. This is a cow in the Great Basin. This rangeland actually looks pretty good here. It's not. It's about 400 to 600 pounds per acre forage production. The growing season throughout most of the western U.S. Is 90 to 120 days. And that's when plants can possibly grow. Doesn't mean they are growing. Okay. And in fact, most of this area is somewhere between 10 and 20 inch precip zones. So a lot of times plant growth stops before the end of the growing season because of drought or lack of moisture. What that means is we have these beef production systems that utilize low quality forages for the majority of the year. Okay. And so the challenge then for producers, find animals that fit these environments and then provide nutritional strategies that optimize the use of these relatively low-quality forages. And so when I started at Montana State, that was kind of where we're at and what we wanted to do. We wanted to do research that looked at the use of fall and winter forages and for a variety of reasons. Basically, 200, 300, 400, 500 head cattle ranches can't really afford $150,000 swathers or $150,000 tractors. And so a lot of our folks are interested in extending the grazing scene, reducing the reliance on harvested forages. It allows for use of rangelands outside the growing season, which for most of these plants is beneficial. And we're finding more and more, we're seeing research where basically the longer we keep cows, and I think the slogan with the ranchers is in their working clothes, the better off we are in terms of calving and a number of those things. But to do this, we're going to have to use high-fiber, low-quality forages. We also have to have systems that evaluate cattle for environmental fit, and the only way we're going to get at this is to use new technologies and really things that we haven't used in the past. So our research program or a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it focuses on strategic supplementation. And that's really is what's the optimal nutrient delivery systems. And I always have people go, what's that mean? And my grad students know this by heart, but it's getting the right amount of nutrients to the right animals at the right time. Okay? It's easier said than done, okay, particularly in extensive environments. Also, the supplement, strategic supplementation in these environments is how do we get optimal use of this? This is just rough fescue pasture outside of Havre, Montana, which is about 30 miles from the Canadian border. Got a lot of feed. It's not very good. How do we get them to use that, and how do we get them to use fairly extensive landscapes during this fall and winter period? And then finally, how do we optimize the use of these rangelands? And so what we've done is we'd use these smart feed trailers where we can map out supplement delivery. If you look here, you can see GPS collars on some of these cows. GPS collars, we get 5-minute fixes, so we know where they're at within about 5 meters every 5 minutes. And we also have activity monitors on that, which you heard about this morning, that tells us what they're doing at each one of those fixes. Then you couple it with the supplement intake, and then you couple that to a weather station that gives you wind speed, temperature, humidity, all those things, and you can really kind of define what these animals are doing. Going to run through just a quick study, and this is probably the only one that I'll talk about with much data to it. You know, it was a study where a PhD student just wanted to look at the influence of supplement intake and cow age on grazing behavior and rangeland use. Sam Weifels was a PhD student. A number of folks were on this project. I think I was just the person that provided the technology and the assistance on the project. This was a 2-year study during essentially the December, January, and November, December, January grazing period. First thing, just to talk about this technology and how it works, and I'm just going to show you the feeding bout data we have before I actually go into the results. We looked at a 45-day grazing period in year one and a 60-day grazing period in year two. Actual individual animal visits to the smart feed trailer in year one is 42,472 visits. Okay. We had 272 cows. Actually, I think that's, yeah, anyway, 272 cows on the study in year one. In year two, we had a little over 300 cows. And you kind of go, well, that's a lot of visits. Well, what we found is that they would go to the trailer, the supplement trailer, multiple times during the day. And actually, the young cows went there more often than the older cows. The older cows seemed to be a little bit more strategic. And when they went, and on really cold days, some of those older cows wouldn't even go to the trailer. Okay, they'd just find the coolies and things like that. So we saw some really interesting behavior work. Each single visit on these data sheets, just so you know what they look like, we'd get the cow EID number. We'd get the exact time of the day that they're there. We'd get the length of time we were there. So we got entry and exits are recorded. And then when we coupled that with the weather station and GPS collar data, we had a pretty clear picture of what these cows were doing and how the weather was impacting them. Average supplement intake for this study was 2.75 pounds per day or 1.25 kilograms. Our target intake was actually 0.91 kilograms. So they were eating more than we thought they would. In year one, we had 272 cows on the study. 264 used a smart feed trailer and had substantial intakes that we considered substantial. And you might ask, well, what happened to the other eight? Well, two of them went to the neighbors. Okay, so they were sort of off our list. Two had EID tags that weren't working. And the other three, the technician up at the Northern Ag Research Center said, I know all about them. They're high-headed cows. They're marked for culling. So I think they're afraid of the trailer. But in my mind, if you can put this out there and get 264 of the cows to eat it, that's pretty darn good. In year two, we had 306 cows on the study. 302, we had feed intake data over the entire period. Again, worked pretty well. The results we got with these cows are probably better than you'd get with most university cattle because every single one of our females since 2008 have been ran through an RFI study post-weaning, so they're used to eating out of feed bunks. They're used to this kind of equipment, and so I know other places have had more difficulties. This kind of data you get, and I'm not going to go through all this, and I think Dr. Weifels would be really alarmed that I summarized his PhD into one slide, but that's all right. This is just age class of the cows. And by the way, age class one here is yearlings. Age class two is 2 and 3-year-old cows, 4 and 5, 6 and 7, 8 and 9, and 10 and over. Okay, and so that sort of gives you the range. And what you see here, and by the way, the bars here aren't standard errors. They're 95% confidence intervals. And so you can see that to our surprise, the yearlings and the 2 and 3 year old cows ate the most supplement and actually had the tightest intake. In other words, there's less variation around those cows. They routinely went to the feeders and they ate. And as you can see, as we got to these older cows, part of it was a numbers thing, just less cows in these groups, but part of it was also a behavior thing. The unfortunate thing when you repeat studies is sometimes you don't get the same results, and that's sort of what you see here. The yearlings in this study, 1.6 kilograms, and this group here is now part of this group here, and so we saw a different intake pattern with these cows. But interestingly enough, and this is where I think we need to keep adding technology to what we're doing, is we attach this data to weather station data where we got weather information every 5 minutes. Now, because of this study, we had CLOC put weather stations in all of our feeders, okay, just so it's less manipulation of data. But this is intake where we modeled intake by those same age classes, yearlings, 2 and 3 year old, 4 and 5, 6 and 7, 8 and 9, 10 and older. And this is what we got for both years. Wind speed, things like that weren't significant, but average mean temperature during the day was significant. And these are the youngest cows, those yearlings. So when it gets really cold, minus 20 degrees C, those young cows eat the most. Here's the next youngest group of cows. And these are the oldest. Right here. And interestingly enough, if you just looked at the data of the previous slide, if you looked at that, you wouldn't necessarily know why did we see the difference from year to year. But if you look here, and what we actually observed here, in year one was much colder than year two, and in fact, the average mean temperature was right around minus 10 degrees C. So if you draw that line up through here, you see the young cows eating the most, the older cows eating the least. In year two, it was much warmer winter, at least during our study period. And in fact, the average mean temperature is around zero. You draw the line up through here, all of a sudden you see why we saw the variation in intake. Who would have thought that we'd see that kind of result? And this is where technology, I think, is really going to advance our knowledge of how to really take care of these cattle, particularly during environmental extremes. Another aspect of our research program is trying to match beef cattle production to western range environments. I have a couple of studies going on that influence mature cow weaning weight ratios and cow size on intake and grazing behavior. This is a master's student that just finished up last fall. Also have a PhD student that's working on yearling heifer residual feed intakes and how that ultimately relates to cow productivity, feed intake, and grazing behavior. And I think just for speeding this along, I'm just going to talk a little bit about Alan's study. Her master's actually created two publications. We hope to get these in popular press, but they are in translational animal science right now. Essentially, the first paper is the influence of weaning weight ratios, where we split a cow herd into high weaning weight ratio, low weaning weight ratio, and looked at winter grazing, winter supplement intake. And the second portion of our study is where we took those same cows, one group weaning 55% of their body weight and another group weaning 45% of their body weight, and we looked at feed intake about 60 days postpartum. We did a 21-day intake study using these same trailers where we did a complete total mixed ration, 90% fiber, and long and short of it is we didn't do this on purpose, but we ended up with 1,400-pound cows, one treatment group that weaned 600-pound calves, and compared that to 1,100-pound cows that weaned 600-pound calves and got intakes that were actually not different. Okay, that may surprise you, but those smaller cows had higher milk production, consumed more, and I think the importance of this is a lot of people are interested in going to smaller size cow, but they're not interested in giving up performance. And I think so the difference then, this idea that, well, we can just increase stocking as we go to these smaller cows is probably flawed. And we need to do more research in this area. Guys have already seen this. Another study that I think sort of illustrates how these feeders can be used is we've been doing some work with salt-limited supplements, and we just wanted to look at the impact of salt level, frequency, and form of supplement on intake and nutrient digestion, the variability of supplement intake in beef cattle. To do this, we did a 2-year study with 60 crossbred heifers. So these same feeders we used in winter rangelands are now in our summer pastures. And we compared intake and intake variation between two forms of salt-limited supplements, basically the same supplement, but one was pelleted and one was loose. And we set up three treatments for this. So the nice thing about these feeders and the nice thing about this technology is in real time you can go to your desk, you can access the feeders, you can tell the feeder which cows get supplement, how much supplement they get, or if they get any supplement at all. And it seemed to work pretty well. Okay, we did 2 years of this. Nothing's ever perfect in life, and I remember in year one, about halfway through the study, we're thrilled that this was working and that we could actually set these treatments up in a pasture without having to have different pastures, different replications. And all of a sudden, the control animal started eating one of the supplements. And so I had a grad student run out there and take a look at it. And, of course, they come back and go, "You're right. We got control cows eating supplement." And essentially, I called CELOC. And much like for you university folks, when you call a computer support person, they go on your computer and fix it. That's kind of what CELOC did with us. They went and checked out our equipment, found out that one of our feed stations had a broken lock, not a gate. And so they express mailed us the lock. We put the lock in, and within about a day had it fixed. So, you know, one of the things, you can do these things. You can really fine-tune how you provide the supplement. But you need to be fairly diligent about checking and making sure the right cows are eating the right thing over the course of the study. Another study that we tried to start last fall, and I'm trying to balance, you know, success stories and sometimes the problem, is we got to use a new prototype of the, and this is a super smart feeder, similar to the one that's out in the parking lot. We also are trying out new low-tech GPS collars, so we're geared up to really get a really cool project underway. Really just wanted to look at supplementation of beef cattle in winter environment and how vegetation changes and cattle change as they approach calving. Every study we had done up to this point, we hadn't had a problem. The unfortunate thing was our Red Bluff Research Ranch is just mature cows, 3-year-old cows and older, and these cows had never been exposed to electronic feeders, had never been through the grow safe system, and it didn't work the best way. We went out there, we tried to dry out them, we had some difficulties with them, and that's part of research. But what we ended up doing is we modified the study, but we ended up getting the cows in. Put him in a scenario where we could feed hay as well as have the supplement there and more confined. And within about 3 weeks, we got the cows trained. Okay? So you just can't go out there, stick it in front of cows, and expect it to work. You have to be a bit more purposeful and make sure the cows are comfortable with the equipment. And what we found is we could get the younger cows to use it some, but some of those 6-, 7-, 8-year-old cows that had never been exposed to this just weren't going to eat out of them. But now they do, fortunately. So this winter, this is going to be the treatments. Just we're going to have 150 head of cows. 50 of them won't get any supplement at all. 50 will get 1.5 kilograms of alfalfa pellets, and 50 will get 3 kilograms. And all we're looking at is just how nitrogen status of these cows. These will certainly be deficient through portions of the winter, and just how that affects how well they use these landscapes. But this kind of technique with super smart feeder, we've done it with different classes of animals, is actually seems to be working quite well. Finally, I think I just wanted to throw out to this group that there's a lot of things that we don't know, and we have a tendency to act like we do. The one is the intake models that I've been telling you about. really haven't changed. I think the last time they were actually changed was 1996 before NRC, and they weren't changed much. And the most recent beef NRC didn't touch any of these models, I think in part because we have no data. The other thing that's very telling to me, the 3 years I've been in Montana, I got to experience one of the worst droughts in history and two of the worst winters in history, which makes me very tired. But it's also illustrated that we don't know much about how the environment impacts beef cattle requirements. You know, most of the models are based on a 1981 NRC publication. Here's a picture of it right there. And what we get out of those models is that we need to increase energy as a function of cold stress. And in fact, it's fairly simplistic. It's basically 1% energy increase for every degree below 32 degrees. In Montana, that doesn't necessarily work because when it's minus 40 and a wind chill of minus 55 to 60, those energy needs greatly exceed anything that we could dream up. What's really frustrating is it doesn't say anything about protein, mineral, or vitamins. And what we've observed in Montana is for the producers that really didn't have adequate nutrition during this winter period is tremendous death loss in our calves post-calving. A lot of weak calf syndrome, a lot of death loss. And so we're kind of trying to get at how do we fine-tune this to make these producers better prepared. We also have very limited information regarding precipitation and wind conditions, which if you don't think that adds to the temperature requirement, you know, hose yourself down, run outside naked, when the wind's blowing, it's about 20 below. Okay, you won't last long, and that's certainly true with these things. So what's the wind chill equivalent? I don't want to give you the impression that these things are, that we know all the answers about them, because there's still a lot of research to be done. We need to do some stocking rate kinds of studies with both the Smart Feed Pro and the Super Smart systems. In that winter grazing scenario that I showed you that data for, we had 8 feeding stations, 300 head of cattle. And just based on the normal distribution of visits, it appears that there's really no amount of competition for those feeders. But keep in mind, they're only eating about 1.5 kilograms of supplement a day. But there we have roughly 30 to 40 head of cows per unit. Depending on how you use this, you know, what's the optimal stocking. For TMRs, total mixed ration, we kind of know it's somewhere between 5 and 8 animals per unit. With supplements, we're still working on those rates. Also, how does supplement delivery method influence supplement intake behavior? This feeder essentially has feed in a feed bunk, and cow sticks its head in there, and it's there. This feeder actually augers it out. So a cow goes in there, it reads its EID tag, goes yes, it's supposed to get supplement, and it will auger it out. So you have to play with that rate at which it's augered out. And just because of the different type of delivery method may change what we observe in terms of feeding behavior, and we need to get a handle on that. You know, I think the ultimate goal, I think, in terms of CELOC is at some point to have a system, and I think this fall they're going to announce a line of products for commercial cattlemen, where you could actually have cattle in a large group and define which animals that you think need supplement. Perhaps it's your young cows, or maybe it's some of the old cows that you should have culled and you didn't, and fine-tune a more precise system. And basically, how do we deliver this in very extensive environments? This is, I think, a very good research tool, but quite frankly wouldn't work for commercial folks. This is something because these bins here, each bin, at least in our system, holds about 400 to 500 pounds of feed. This one will hold 5 to 6,000 pounds in this hopper, and so they have different places where they might work. With that, I think I'm done. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.